Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma therapists, if you've been waiting for the right time to join Trauma Therapist Network membership, this is it. Between now and the end of 2024, you can save up to 50% off of your first month of membership when you submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Join us for live calls every week. Self-care, case consultation, networking, and training are included every month. We have 4 live calls, and we have 3 tiers of membership. If the live calls don't fit your schedule, you can join the inner circle, where you can access the library of recordings, or you can do the Listing Plus membership. All the details are at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Hope to see you in the community. Submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com today. Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 462.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today we are going to be talking about grief and loss, subject that many people shy away from, but we all experience. And last summer, 2023, so I guess summer of last year, I should say, I met Debbie Jenkins Frankel for the first time in person. I had not really known about her work. And when we had booths together at a conference, we were right next to each other, and she's just a really delightful person. So we went to dinner, and walking to dinner, we started talking about grief, because a few months prior to that, I had just lost someone in my family, and it was really impactful. And she just showed such a depth of knowledge on the topic from her personal and professional experiences. So I wanted to bring her onto Therapy Chat then, and here it is more than a year later, and I finally circled back and asked her to come on, as I am right now dealing with a loss of one of my parents, which you will hear us talking about in this episode. And what we decided to do is to back-to-back episodes. So the first conversation will be the one you're hearing now, and it's coming out just before the Christmas holiday, the time of year that there are a lot of holidays and a lot of gatherings and celebrations, which often highlight who's missing or how festive we're not feeling under the circumstances. So this is not specifically focused on the holidays, but we do talk about navigating important dates and finding ways to honor and celebrate the person who's missing, or the people, or the experiences that you are carrying inside, so that instead of being preoccupied in the back of your mind with something that's not being brought out, there's space for what you feel and for resolve, as Debbie explains. So bringing to you today the first conversation of these two, and next week we'll have the second one. And Debbie offers so many resources and practices to use in our conversation. So she talks about a free course that she has. It's for anyone who's grieving or wants to understand grief. And she talks about how loss impacts us in so many ways. Again, transitions and changes are part of life, and they all include experience of loss within them. And so this conversation is packed with a lot of information, a lot of resources, and a lot of emotion. And next week's episode is going to be the same way. So I hope you will learn something. And if there's something that you need to understand about grief or you want to learn more, that this will whet your appetite to study this topic more in depth for yourself or for yourself in your profession. I also wanted to tell you that in January, we're going to have a special episode. So our first episode of the new year will be a special episode featuring many TTN members, and which Debbie is one as well, and also some past guests. So I'm looking forward to bringing that to you. Until then, wishing you peace. May you be well. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so honored to be here with my friend and colleague and TTN member, Debbie Jenkins-Frankel, LMFT. Debbie, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Thank you for having me. I've said this before, I love the work that you have done in building this network and this podcast. There's 460 plus episodes?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
I know. And yeah. You're going to be, and this I'm is going to be, yeah. Oh, thank you. This is going to be one. And then we're going to do a second one. So this is a topic that I've been dying to talk to you about since we were together in England and we were walking to get dinner and we were talking about this. Because you specialize in grief and teaching therapists how to work with grief, and you are really so knowledgeable and skilled in this area. So before we get into talking about what we're going to talk about today, will you just tell our audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Okay. I'm an LMFT. Actually, I was telling you before, is an LMFT that was actually trained by two LCSWs. And I initially worked in psych hospitals for 15 years when I had first gotten into grad school and into this business. But I became a griever. We're all grieving different types of losses. My mom died the last semester right before I was about to finish my thesis in grad school. And that changed everything. That changed my whole entire world. My mom was only 60 at the time. She'd been diagnosed with liver cancer and then died 2 weeks later. She didn't even have time to start treatment. And at that time, had gone back east to actually help her, hopefully with treatment. And then she died very quickly. And I stayed for a couple of months with my dad afterwards, because frankly, I was really frightened of how this impacted him and my world turned upside down. And I think about that for grievers because after that happened and after I went back to grad school, I started seeing grief everywhere. It was everywhere. And my own therapist was, he was like, well, you just have to go through the five stages. And I was like, okay, we'll go through the five stages. It was in 1990. But they didn't fit for me. I was like, denial. Denial. I actually, as a therapist, I don't use the word denial. I tend to talk about the surrealness of the world, that everything looks completely different and the same all at the same time, and it's just weird. And so that didn't really work for me. And, there's anger, but a lot of people will talk about, grievers talk about, but I'm not mad at them. But if we ask actually questions like, what do you wish had been different? We can access that. And it's not always anger. You know, a lot of times it's sadness. A lot of times my three principles that I work off of is that I'm always listening for regrets. What do we wish we had done differently? I'm listening for resentments. What do we wish the other person had done differently? Okay. Or people around had done differently. And that could be medical staff, that could be anybody. And then also what was not expressed as far as being appreciative, grateful for? What was the good stuff too? Because we're left with that. So anyway, so the five stages didn't really work. And an acceptance, I tend not to use the word acceptance because there's a connotation with it that it's okay. Of whatever it is that happened was okay. And often it's not. Okay. So I tend to use more of an acknowledgement that it happened, an acknowledgement of all the feelings attached to the whole story. So I started taking courses in grief in grad school, outside of grad school.
I was going to say they had courses on grief in your grad school. Boy, that was...
Not in grad. Well, while I was in grad school, I found them outside of grad school.
Yeah.
I also teach over at Pepperdine, and I teach a practicum class once a week. And I have a new class starting in January. And so I will be saying in the first week to the class, you have signed up for a practicum class, but perhaps unbeknownst to some of you, because I have a reputation now, so some of you might know, is that you have also signed up for a grief class, because I can't teach this stuff without talking about loss, because that is underneath everything that people come to us for as therapists, is that there's always been loss and transition and changes, and we don't do well with that. You know, grief is so much about the helplessness, and really, as human beings, we do not do helpless well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do helpless well. Yeah, and so it's learning so many different components about grief. When I was in grad school, I think I was still in grad school. Maybe I had finished grad school. I ended up at some point going and getting trained in grief recovery at the Grief Recovery Institute. Actually, I was with Russell and John for almost 20 years. I was a trainer, international trainer for them for 12 years. And then when I left in 2012, initially, I was the only therapist that was on staff with them. And John and Russell were not therapists. And I left because it's like, you know what, there's other ways of looking at grief. These are really great tools that I learned from them. And I've adapted them in working with people over the last 25, almost 30 years now. Ooh, it's been 30 years. But I've also learned so much from so many different people. I know that you have become very good friends with Linda Tai, who's one of my favorite people. She's one of my favorite people. I've taken her 12-week course 3 times now. And it's something that I recommend to new therapists and grad school students as well. So, but there's so much. I did Megan Devine's course for 6 months. You know, her stuff is awesome as well.
She's Refuge in Grief.
Yes. Yeah. I've taken David Kessler's course. I'm not crazy about David Kessler because I'm not crazy about the five stages. And I keep taking courses because I think how can I teach this stuff if I'm not staying current with what's going on? So I'm a big, huge grief nerd. That whole entire bookcase, just that bookcase, is nothing but grief-related material. That doesn't even count what's on my Kindle.
Oh, yeah. That thing can hold a lot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm totally a grief nerd. I love doing this work because we get to see people get their feet back on the ground again. We don't know what that's going to look like. Okay. But I always tell people when they come in, and I really mean it, is that I'm going to hold the hope for you. because you may not have a whole lot of hope right now. And why would you? Because your whole world just blew up for so many different reasons. And so, but I'm going to hold it for you. And I keep saying that because I've had people, many people over the years who have later on said, you know, when you said that, I didn't realize I really needed to hear that. And it's not like, oh, come on, it's hopeful, you know, just be hopeful. It's like, no.
Look at the silver lining.
Why would you be hopeful at all? But we get to see people get their feet back on the ground. And that is why I keep doing this stuff. I love doing grief work. I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, it seems like the more I begin to understand about grief, both through my own grief, but and talking to people like you and Linda and others about grief, I just am beginning to realize that it's something that everyone wants to avoid. And it's something that is just like, it's almost like part of being alive to experience grief and loss. And
yeah.
So when you mentioned loss, I just want to say, for those who are listening who might not be therapists or just haven't thought about it this way, can you talk a little bit about really what you're talking about with loss? You touched on it, but you know, we think of grief, we think someone died, you know?
Yes. So there's so many different types of losses. And on my website, CalabasasCounseling.com, in the resources section, and this actually, I just found this out, is that this download has been downloaded more than anything else on that site, which is types of losses. And so there's divorce, there's loss of a romantic relationship. But you know, I'm gonna say relationship loss. And so under relationship loss, there's loss of a partner, there's loss of a child, loss of a parent, loss of a sibling. How about a grandparent, a caregiver, a friend, a pet? With pet loss, and I think that there's so much more support for pet loss now, but for many, many years, you know, when I get the call of, I know this sounds silly, but it's almost always about pet loss. Because, this sounds silly, but the death of my pet has been more traumatic than the death of some of my family members. Maybe there's something wrong with me. It's like, no, it's a completely different type of relationship. But those are relationships. Those are examples of relationship losses. I have on that list loss of a partner, but there's also loss of an ex-partner. And those are trickier. Those are trickier griefs because we think, oh, well, you know, it was a difficult relationship. You should be grateful.
I hear that so much. You know, it's like, well, we weren't close or we had things ended badly. So, you know, it's almost a relief that they're gone. But why do I feel like this?
Exactly. Exactly. I know it's a sneakier one because of all of the loss of potential of how it could have been or how it should have been. And then there's types of losses of, you know, what about loss of home? Which can be due to a disaster, or it could be, you know, being placed in foster care or in a skilled nursing facility, or just moving. There's health loss, infertility. Mark and I went through infertility challenges for many years. You know, there's dementia, autoimmune illnesses, aging, chronic pain and illness, a huge number of different types of losses, loss of independence, loss of trust within yourself or within your own body, you know, mental illness, special needs. When we look at identity loss, you know, there's, you know, loss of professional identity. A lot of people had a really hard time with this during COVID, you know, working out of, you know, their bedrooms or having their jobs slashed. Relational loss and relational identity of becoming a widow versus being a partner, a widower. Financial identity of changes, loss or change in finances. Physical identity, you know, what about athletes who have a career injury that wipes them out of all of those hopes and dreams? You know, gender identity, you know, not just for the person who within their own body, but also for those around them too.
Okay.
And then you see, I have on here safety loss, loss of trust, loss of freedom, loss of justice, loss of the right for respect, loss of independence. And then actually on this handout, I have loss of loved ones, health, financial changes, and return to in-person routines that was related to the pandemic. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking of when you mentioned professional identity, I was thinking about the way that people often react to retirement. They can't find their footing again. You know, they're just like,
or loss of meaning, loss of purpose. Yeah. So there's so many different types of losses. I have to say one of the ways that here at our center, we're all grief informed. We have amazing staff. Currently, we have 5 associates who just are really amazing human beings. And then my husband and I are both therapists. He specializes in trauma. I specialize in grief. We do a lot of traumatic grief loss. And there was a whole point of why I said that. And now I can't remember. Oh, I know I remember. Go off on tangents.
Loss of what I was going to say.
Right. Off in my mind, my memory, is that we have people do a loss map. It's actually part of our assessment in the beginning is here, let's map it out physically. And so if I'm working with somebody online, then we'll do it maybe on a whiteboard. In person, I'll do it on an 18 by 12 pad of paper. We've also done it as a chutes and ladders game for kids. That's really cool, of where in your life, you know, as you're going up the ladders, you know, is as you go through the path, you know, what's been the ups, what's been the downs. Okay. And so when we do it as a timeline, what's really, really cool is having them look at all the different types of changes, and some of them are positive, or some changes are negative and positive. Okay. But to have it mapped out over and over again, we've had people look at and go, wow, holy moly, look at all the stuff that I've been through. You know, I've had people say, holy shit, no wonder I started drinking when I was 13. Yeah, it's like, look at all this other stuff. And so even just having a visual picture of it, and some people want to add different colors or different stickers or pictures, but we're helping them not just tell the story, but what's the emotions that are attached to the story. But I really find doing it visually is very validating as well of, yes, this was happening. And this other stuff was happening at the same time too. Maybe, you know, yes, were there people in your life that you were able to go to during these really hard times? You know, I'm always listening for how isolated was the person throughout their life of different types of losses.
It's interesting you say that, because I think what I've noticed myself in my, you know, I recently lost my dad.
Your dad, yeah.
Yeah. And last year it was my father-in-law, which also brought up a lot for me because I've been with my husband for 30 years almost.
Yeah. And that he was another parental figure for you.
Right. Yeah. Even though he wasn't a childhood attachment figure, he was someone who, you know, he was my children's grandparent, and we spent a lot of time with them. But, you know, when you mentioned like isolation and you mentioned like the resentment, I think a lot of what has come up for me in these experiences is wanting everyone to come together in grief, and feeling so like hurt, resentful, angry that they're not, you know? And so that's like, for me, it's sort of like a message of like, and it's an abandonment theme, right?
Absolutely.
It's like, nobody was there for me, or who's going to be there for me?
Yeah, and because it highlights in those family dynamics, it highlights, you know, what do we wish had been different? You know, who got owed what? There's all these family dynamics that change after a key person, whoever that is in the family, you know, is not there anymore. And so it might be that they have died. It might be that they're missing. It might be that they've cut them, that they've cut off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because family estrangement, We know this, and I love that you've had many episodes on family estrangement, especially over the last couple of years, because I think it's being talked about more. But just, you know, when we get to the point where it's like, okay, you cut off communication, it doesn't mean that it's unfinished within you.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Sometimes that's just a start of actually working with that.
Exactly. And I think that I'm about to do a presentation in the beginning of January for Terry Daniel on the Grief and Belief Conference, I think it is. I'll get more information for you. But we're talking about the theme is end of life family dynamics. And so,
hey,
yes, there's a whole day on this from some brilliant, brilliant presenters that I'm really lucky to be included in. And so, but we're talking about, you know, what happens with those dynamics at the end of when families, you know, I think try to ferret out who is most important and who isn't, who got owed what. You know, this is when, if there's a lot of fracture and there were a lot of splits in the family system beforehand, then that will get magnified afterwards. And it shows up, it looks like it shows up about the possessions and about the money. It's like, oh no, it's all about the money. It's like, actually, it's not really about the money. It's really about those assumptions that we've made over the years of who's most important, who isn't being heard, who isn't being valued. And I get owed this. And all of the dynamics completely change. I don't know if you remember string art from the 70s. I'm old.
I think it was something that I didn't quite understand.
Right.
Based on my age.
So there's like a whole bunch of nails. There's a whole bunch of pegs or nails in this board. And then the art is you start one nail and then you just make whatever design you want and string it along all the different nails or pegs. And so I think what's really interesting is I'm going to get a piece of art. I'm going to make a string art one day. But what's really interesting is that all has to get restrung after a significant person is gone in the family system. Everybody has to deal with each other in different ways, or they decide not to deal with each other. And that accumulates, you know, and so loss is cumulative. It is all of those resentments and regrets are also cumulative. You know, that's where that scorecard comes in. You listen to it in sibling rivalry. No, but, you know, dad always favored you. And, you know, what about me? And I didn't get this. And that means it represents this. Okay. You have a lot of families who the person who is dying doesn't leave a will, a lot of sudden death that wasn't planned ahead at all. And now what? But the relationship, a lot of it is grieving what could have been in that relationship. And like I said, that grief is much sneakier because we have to take a look at, you know, what do you wish the other person had done differently? But also taking a look at what do we wish we had done differently? Okay. What's our part of it? If you look at those three components, and Ira Barak wrote a great book of the four things that matter most. And so what he talks about in that is what matters most is he's a palliative care physician. And really from his work, he, you know, looked at, you know, what do people really talk about at the very, very end when they know that they're dying and they're willing to talk about it is they want to make sure that they apologize for what they've done. They want to make sure that they forgive or let go of the resentment to other people in their life. And they want to make sure that they say, I appreciate or thank you. And then they also want to be able to say, I love you and goodbye. Because if you look at those four, and there's a, I'm trying to remember what the term is, there's a Hawaiian custom. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember.
Is it the Hanapano?
Yes. Yes.
I hope I pronounced that close to correctly.
Yes. And that's about, I'm sorry. I forgive you, and thank you. Yeah. And so it's very simple. I didn't say it was easy at all. But how many times that if you look at all the unfinished conversations that we have in our relationships,
mm-hmm.
and those unfinished conversations are that we didn't get to say, or we tried to express what was going on and the other person didn't want to hear it, so it wasn't acknowledged, or we didn't want to hurt their feelings, so we didn't tell them in order to be able to spare them, but we're left with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I don't miss at all? That vicious week before my period when I felt like crawling out of my skin. Skin that was breaking out, cravings. Ugh. Now it's easier to manage PMS with Estro Control. Estro Control is a formula developed by Happy Mammoth, a supplement company dedicated to making women's lives easier. The way Estro Control eases PMS is quite interesting. The ingredients help support the liver, and that's where our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. So when the estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, women may start having PMS, breaking out, getting cravings, and feeling low all of a sudden. Estro Control is made specifically for women who are premenopausal, so it's perfect for women that haven't entered menopause yet. In fact, it's amazing for perimenopause when hormones start to fluctuate and PMS can turn into a beast. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CHAT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today.
Today's episode is sponsored by Psychotherapy Networker and PESI. If you're a therapist, be sure to check out the partner page, which is linked in the show notes, where you can get discounted trainings with previous Therapy Chat guests like Courtney Armstrong, Dr. Leslie Korn, Dr. Ariel Schwartz, Dr. Tammy Nelson, Dr. Janina Fisher, Rebecca Case, Dr. Peter Levine, Dr. Lindsay Gibson, Deb Dana, Lori Gottlieb, and many, many others. You'll find the link in the show notes to my partner page with PESI and Psychotherapy Networker, where you can find all these discounted trainings. If you need CEs, this is a great place to go.
Therapists, we've all had that moment. You wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my gosh, did I do my notes? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore when you use Therapy Notes. Therapy Notes makes it easy to write your notes, get them done quickly, but thoroughly. My group practice has used Therapy Notes for 6 years, and everyone always finds it easy to use. But the best thing is, if you do need help, you can call their customer service number and a person answers the phone. And anytime I've ever had to use it, which is maybe 3 times in the past 6 years, my issue has been resolved easily with a cheerful demeanor in 15 minutes or less. So I highly recommend Therapy Notes. And don't forget, go to therapynotes.com and use promo code CHAT to get 2 free months.
And
I know,
so
I'm starting to cry here.
Yeah. Yeah. All of those.
Well, I just wanted to say, like, about that part that people have things they want to say, they don't say them, and then they're left with them. It's like, what do you do with that?
Actually, there's a lot we can do about it. There really is. That's why I do this. Is you know, we are left with it of, you know, those unheard conversations, those unsaid conversations, which turn into if onlys. And the if only, a lot of if onlys are our system manifests all those if onlys because we feel helpless. And if only we had done this, then it would have been better. It's like the if onlys are never, oh, it would have been worse. Yeah. That's not the purpose of the if onlys in our system, in our brain. You think of what's the stuff that could have been, because that would have fixed it and then I'd feel better.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I wouldn't be suffering like this if this had happened or something.
Right.
But almost sometimes maybe that can be like a distraction or diversion from
yes.
the sadness we feel. You know, that we don't want to feel that pain. So we focus on something that feels like we could have controlled it.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, those, you know, if we look at prolonged grief and emotional pain, is that, and prolonged grief really should have been called, continue to be called complicated grief, because relationships are complicated. And when relationships don't go well, and when there is a lot of conflict, when there's a lot of trauma, and so that can be physical abuse, but so often, and you've done great, great episodes with emotional neglect, with, you know, emotionally immature parents, you know, which really comes down to what didn't get heard and what didn't get said, and the weight of that for us, and the weight of how we bring it into our other relationships as well.
Yeah. And I just am also thinking about what, with what you were sharing about, like, if only I had been able to say this or that, the way that, and I think for so many trauma survivors, this happens, people who have childhood trauma, there's something they wanted their parents to hear, or they wanted them to acknowledge or apologize for, or whatever, and they don't want to talk to them about it in adulthood. And then, you know, people, as we age, say we meaning the trauma survivor, and then the parent is aging, there can begin to be this like sense of urgency to resolve this before the end of the parent's life.
Right.
And then this, like, now they're gone and it's never going to be able to be resolved.
Right.
Kind of
finality of, you know, the permanence of, wow, this is never going to get fixed in real time.
In real time. Do you have any thoughts about other ways that it might have, there still could be some potential?
Yes. I do. I think, you know, I'll use my own example of my dad, my relationship with my dad. I love my dad. I have a much better relationship with him now. He's been dead for 20 years. And so, but he was very stoic. And so he held a lot of stuff in, and there was a rejecting part of him, you know, if you know, I didn't do a task correctly, or he would just not talk to me. And then, you know, it would be sometimes days. We went a few months at some point much later in my life. And then he would call and there'd be him like, oh, you know, how are you doing? What?
Just acting like nothing happened.
Right. We're not going to talk about that. So there was a lot of stuff that didn't get said. And I have to say, I definitely noticed that it was really impacting my relationships with, no surprise here, authority male figures.
Mm-hmm.
Because my dad would, he wasn't a yeller. He wasn't a screamer. He was silent. And when he was disappointed in me, which would feel crushing, I would get the, and that meant.
I know so much exactly what you mean by that.
Exactly. So I actually had the willingness, finally, I was in enough discomfort in this, you know, in kind of where I was in my life of, you know what, I really need to do this stupid dad work. And he, by that time, he had cancer. Actually, my whole family has died from different types of cancers. And he was my last surviving member of my family. And so I did this work. Part of it was from the work that I learned over at Grief Recovery Institute. Part of it was from a lot of other different processes. And which really looked at, I needed to look at what was my part? What was my part that I was willing to accept responsibility for? And what was all this stuff that I wish that he had done differently as well? But I think that we have to acknowledge what happened, and we have to not only acknowledge the event, but also all the feelings attached to it. Okay. And then be able to release that And so I had gone through, you know, going through major, not every single part of the whole entire relationship, because there's definitely patterns. Okay. But, you know, I want you to know, when you would cut me off and not talk to me for months, I felt ashamed, embarrassed, rejected, unimportant, and unloved. And so those are those first, you know, here's the event, here's the emotions. And then add in I choose not to give you that power over me today. Sometimes for some people, I'll say, you know, maybe it's I choose not to obsess over this for the rest of today, especially if it has a whole lot of voltage. And so I did all that in writing it out. Okay. You can do it as empty chair, but I didn't do it with him directly because I knew damn well that we weren't going to get very far if I had said that, because I would have gotten the and you're cut off. And yeah. And so that was always a threat in growing up, was you're cut off. And so I did that. And I was also able to then get to a point to acknowledge of what I was grateful for and what I appreciated. And so I had done all of that work before I went out to go visit him. And so we go on this trip and we're just hanging out at his house. He moved to a golfing community. And so we're off. He's off tootling me in his golf cart. And he says something about this trip that he and his wife, he got remarried actually weeks after my mom died. And it wasn't an affair beforehand. It complicated so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said something about he and his wife had gone on this trip, and with the assumption that I was resentful about it. And I was like, Dad, you had a great trip. And I know that you had brought them. I got a really cool t-shirt out of it. And, you know, Dad, but I had said, you know, I'm actually really grateful for, you know, the fact that she made sure that, you know, you started treatment over at the hospital, because he had just been diagnosed with cancer. But I was able, what was interesting is I was able to stay level and grounded and didn't get caught into, okay. And I remember he stopped the cart and he said, well, you know, she's just jealous of how close you and I are. I had to really work on that one. I still remember that one. So I was sitting there thinking, we are? Because holy shit, I don't know. Because, you know, I don't hear from you for, you know, weeks, months at a time. We are? But I decided to share that was probably not going to be a good thing. So in that trip, though, and this is kind of a longer story, but in that trip, I also realized we had gone through, I call it the blueberry muffin story. And so he had asked me if I wanted to make blueberry muffins, which was his cue to talk about mom without talking about mom. You know, there's people that aren't in the family anymore. We don't go there. We don't talk about that, which is not that or it. It's the relationship. Mm. And so we made blueberry muffins from scratch, which actually my mother always had Betty Crocker to help her out. But we did not have Betty Crocker. She was not in the pantry. And so we did it from scratch. And so I read off the ingredients. He puts in salt. I meant baking powder. It's too much. I don't know a whole lot about baking, but I know it has to be exact. And so I said, oh, Dad. And I get the... And here's what's really, really cool is I maybe flinched for a second, and then I got back in the moment really fast. And that was the first part of this miracle of, oh, and I looked at him and said, Dad, we could actually just start over again. And that's where the second part where he went, I guess so. And we remade those blueberry muffins. They were the worst blueberry muffins in the world, I have to say. They tasted horrible. And I loved those blueberry muffins because of what I realized in that interaction later on was I just averted like a 2-hour fiasco, which would have ended up in me going, I'm sorry. And that was all old. But I didn't have the emotional voltage to it. And I think a lot of that is that we have to do this with somebody who's safe. to listen to us. But I think so much of it is that acknowledgement of what happened to us and for us to identify the emotions. In other words, wait a minute. You know, we've been told, oh, it's not a big deal. I don't know why you're making a big deal out of this. Because as we grow up, we then talk ourselves into that. I don't know why I'm making such a big deal out of this. It's like, you know what? We have to acknowledge it, okay? And then send a send-off to it as well. So, you know, I want you to know when you wouldn't speak to me for months, I felt so uncared for and unloved. And I choose not to give you that power over me today. I don't say forever. I just say today. Okay? And over and over and over again, it's a reason why I changed the way that I worked many, many years ago, is because I had way too many people who would come in and say, wow, you know, I'm not so preoccupied with that anymore. You know, is that, you know, that feels truthful. And we, you know, I talk to people about, look, I'm gonna help you with the wording, but I'm never want to put words in your mouth. What I'm listening for is what I hear was missing for you, what you would have wanted to say and what you would have wanted to hear. Because so often we're waiting for the apology, but we're never, ever, ever, ever going to get that damn apology.
Yeah.
You know, I know of somebody who did this work about her brother, and it was after their dad had died. And she actually, by the way, she had kept dad's watch after dad died because she knew damn well that her brother really wanted that watch. But after their mom died, mom had brought, had kept mom's brush. And this is a woman who shaved her head. She didn't need it for her hair, but it was sentimental. The brush was really, really sentimental. It was what her grandma used to brush her hair with. And so her justification was, well, you know, I did that because, yeah, because he kept dad, you know, mom's brush. So it's like, well, here, let's take a look at identifying for you in the relationship with your brother who is alive. Let's take a look at the whole entire relationship and identify what's your side of the street. Okay. So now I'm moving over to regrets. What do you wish you had done differently? And so, you know, there were a couple of things of, you know, I'm sorry that I went off on him about this, or, you know, I'm sorry I called him really shitty names behind his back and to his face. And when I said, you know what, I wonder if there's an apology. I wonder if there's an I'm sorry I kept dad's watch. She was like, No, because, but he kept, it was like, well, what? Everything after the but actually gets acknowledged in the other list. That's what's really cool, is that this is not a, here, this is not a trade-off, okay? But don't justify and rationalize your behavior that there's a teeny, insy, beatsy, 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 beatsy part of you that might kind of feel a little bit bad about that. And so I love, she was like, okay, I'll write it out. But when I have people do writing in session, I do not do it, give it to them for homework, because it's ridiculous. Why? Nobody does it. Nobody does it. And they're more likely to be activated or more likely to get into writing a venting letter. And a venting letter is very different than what I call an internal repair writing. So she looked at me with a little squint her eye, and she says, okay, I'll write it, but I don't mean it. I said, I don't give a if you don't mean it. You don't have to mean it. This is just about you owning it, and that you're going to own it here. You are not going to talk about this with your brother directly, because he's not available. He's not safe to do that. And so
that's an important point right there.
Right. Right. And so, you know, trying to, in her doing this work, here's what was really, really, really cool. She did this work. She had a whole lot of, I want you to know statements. Okay. She did a lot of acknowledgement that she was willing to do about all of the really crappy shit that he had done over the years. And then she found a couple of good things that she really used to admire about him and she appreciated about him. And as I had another client who we had gone through this process, and he had a really awful relationship with his dad. And so he came back in one day and he said, you know, I actually found two things that I really like about my dad that I was actually excited about coming here today, because he hated coming to see me. I don't take it personally. It's okay. But the, you know, we start then going to, oh, here, I can give them credit for this now. And we don't have to do it directly. But in doing all of that and putting it all together and reading it aloud in sessions, she then shifted within her, is that she wasn't holding it. You know, again, I like to think of that as, you know, she was able to reduce the voltage in that so that she could tell the story, but there wasn't the emotional reactivity in it anymore. It wasn't disconnected, okay, but it wasn't overwhelming anymore. And she ended up inviting her brother to spread dad's ashes out at sea. And so they went, and his wife and her partner came along, and she came back and said, wow, that was pretty interesting. She said, well, he took his socks off when we got in the boat. He started threw his sock at me, and then he threw another sock at me. And she said, you know, she said, I just laughed. She said, because he's so ridiculous, where there's no way that wouldn't have. And she said, there's no way that wouldn't have absolutely completely set me off. I mean, just seeing his name on the phone would set her off for the rest of the day before this. And so at some point in that boat trip, she said her sister-in-law looked at her brother and said, I don't know what your sister's been doing, but you should find out and you should do that, because she's not the same person, because she wasn't taking the bait anymore. And that was awesome. And that I hear over and over and over and over again of people being able to get their feet back on the ground, you know, of being able to stand their ground and have much more clarity, so that it actually enables them to have a different kind of conversation with them. This is what I noticed in with my dad, is that having a different conversation with him afterwards was a lot easier. And I ended up, you know, because of the work that he had done, I had done, and I'm sure the work that my dad did that I didn't recognize either before, and maybe by the good graces of some other spirit, because he ended up apologizing to me a day or two before he died for being so rejecting. And it wasn't something that I needed anymore. I did not need it in order to feel better. It was this wonderful bonus that I got. And I would not have been able to respect it had I not done that work and he had offered that to me, because I would have fucked up. I would have said, really? Oh, well, let me tell you, da 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 da. But I had already gotten a lot more grounded and had already kind of deactivated that resentment. And honestly, Laura, that is what I see over and over and over and over again. And it's just so cool.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com.
Trauma therapists, if you've been waiting for the right time to join Trauma Therapist Network membership, this is it. Between now and the end of 2024, you can save up to 50% off of your first month of membership when you submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Join us for live calls every week. Self-care, case consultation, networking, and training are included every month. We have 4 live calls, and we have 3 tiers of membership. If the live calls don't fit your schedule, you can join join the Inner Circle, where you can access the library of recordings, or you can do the Listing Plus membership. All the details are at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Hope to see you in the community. Submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Regan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.